The holidays bring families together. That's a good thing, but sometimes you can have too much of a good thing. Today, we'll celebrate the holidays dysfunctional family style. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Betty Ochard grew up in Cedar Rapids in a family that really created the prototype for dysfunctional families. She's written about her childhood in the 1920s and 30s in the charming book, The Home for the Friendless. Also with us today is Volker Thomas, Associate Professor and Program Coordinator for Couple and Family Therapy at the University of Iowa. And we want to hear your stories as well. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. As families gather for the holiday season, expectations are high. In spite of love and the magic of the holidays, family tensions don't just disappear. This hour, we'll talk about how to cope with family stress this time of year, and we'll share some stories as well. Some funny stories, some not so funny stories. Family tension can be hard to handle, but as a culture, we certainly seem to enjoy other people's holiday stress. Here's a moment from the television show Modern Family.
Guess who's not coming for Christmas?
And the spotlight shifts.
Mom, she canceled. What? In a voicemail, no less.
Unbelievable. And by that, I mean believable.
Why isn't Nana coming?
I don't know, something about her new boyfriend whisking her away on a cruise.
Yeah, I just got my gift.
What boyfriend?
Carl, the cruise ship captain.
It was in her holiday newsletter.
Oh, I can't read that whole thing.
A moment from the television show Modern Family. And Betty Ochard's family was a modern family back in the 1930s. She grew up in Cedar Rapids and has written about her childhood in the wonderful book, The Home for the Friendless. She's on the line with us today from San Jose, California. Hello, Betty.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, this is fun.
It's so good to have you back. And for people who didn't hear you on Talk of Iowa last time or haven't dipped into your memoir, tell us a little bit about your family. You're the oldest child of three children, right?
Yes.
And tell us about your mom and dad a little.
Well, I have to digress a minute. Hearing you say modern, when that was during the 30s, makes me laugh, but we were modern during the 30s.
Right.
My parents married very young, and they were quite different from each other. My dad was kind of quiet, easygoing, steady. My mother was, I'm more like my mother. Well, maybe I'm like them both. Mom was really out there, funny, talented, likable, but volatile. And I think possibly she might have had what we now call, what are the mood swings? I forgot the term. But anyway, it's...
Bipolar.
Bipolar. Hard word. Anyway, so they had a lot of problems. And during my lifetime, they married and divorced from each other three times. But they were separated too many times to count. And during those breakups, my family, and they're all still there, large Peel family, lots of aunts and uncles and cousins and grandparents. They would take care of us kids. We'd be split up sometimes. But then my parents would get back together. Now, they tried very hard. When they were together, we had good times. They were split up so much because of Mom's driving, ups and downs, that And it was poor time. We were very poor. During one of those times, my parents just had to put us in the home for the friendless. Now, maybe some people there don't remember it, but it's now gone, and it's part of the Coe College campus. But it was built. It was a very, very old building. And we were there from late 1937 to early 1940. And we left there a couple of times for various reasons. But all in all, it was about 2 years. And it offered a great deal of stability for us kids during that time that we were in the home for the friendless. So whenever we went back, when we did go back home with my parents, we had a settled time for a while. But it was up and down. really all of the time that I lived at home, which was 17 and a half years, away to college, then back home, and then I met my husband. So living with my family was, what would you call it? We were not a Leave It to Beaver family.
No, you weren't.
It was like a movie.
Well, you know, and I just mentioned how when we get together for the holidays or for special occasions, we do have high expectations, but that doesn't make the family tensions go away. And Bobby's birthday party, your brother's birthday party, is a perfect example of how those tensions don't disappear just because everybody wants to celebrate something happy. So tell us about Bobby's birthday.
Well, isn't that the truth? When we were at the home, my parents really wanted, they were working hard to try to hold it together. They were resolved, you know, to make this work. And so they lived in a little wreck of a house down by Quaker Oats and the water and the railroad tracks. But they were doing well. So they decided to check us out, just like a book, you know, books, three books from the library, and see if we couldn't really get along, all of us, you know, for a while. And it was a noble attempt. And we were excited because it was my brother's sixth birthday, which meant I was nine and Patty would have been three. So Mom was all excited, asked Bob what he wanted to eat, and he said, we've got to have hot dogs and root beer. So naturally, we added our other favorite things, corn on the cob, fresh tomatoes, cucumbers, root beer. My mother made a birthday cake, a chocolate cake. Now, my mother never was given money to shop, rarely. Dad bought everything. Mom told him what to buy. She made out a list. On the list, she had birthday candles. And so when he came home with the bags, we helped unload them. We were so excited about everything. I didn't notice the birthday candles weren't there, but my mother did. She said, Butch, that was his nickname. And he called her Girl or Juanita or Nita. Butch, where are the candles? And he said, what candles? The birthday candles for the cake. I didn't buy them. Why? He said, we can't eat candles. And she said, but we can drink beer because there was a six-pack in there. Well, so she was very upset. But she tried hard to keep it under control because it was Bobby's birthday. So we got through the birthday dinner pretty well. But I was nervous because Mom was quiet, and I knew the signs. And my dad said, pass the salt, or she'd pass it and thump it down on the table in front of him. And I just knew trouble was afoot. So time came for the birthday cake to be, I can just see this now, to be presented to my brother. No candles, so my mother sticks six matches, you know, with the heads up, in a nice little, I think it was in the shape of a six, but a real small six, because six candles had to be tight in order to look like a six. So she lit them, and they just exploded into a bonfire on top of the cake. And my father, he just jumped up and knocked his chair over. Bobby just, you know, we all just jumped back, and he just went crazy, and he said, well, Nita, what did you do that for? And she said, because you didn't buy candles. And then he said, you're a crazy woman, and she picked up the edge of the table, and she just tipped everything over. And now this is a sad, funny story, because when my brother and I were recalling it as adults, we weren't sad. We just always laughed about these crazy things that happened. Well, that day it wasn't really that funny.
No.
But I took my brother and sister into the living room, and my mother had a knack for breaking dishes and throwing things. And we just waited. We were never afraid we were going to be hurt. We just kind of hated the noise and the activity. And we kind of sat in the living room while they were carrying on in the kitchen. And the neighbors called the police, and they came. And my brother said, he's the one who got up to look because he thought the police were going to arrest us all, take us all to jail. And he said, Dad was standing in the corner with his arms straight out, fending off anything that my mother threw at him. But now it took a while for the police to calm her down. By the time they left, there were two of them. She was crying. They had their arms around her shoulders. And they said, now you folks get some help, okay? And they says, okay. And our uncle came, Uncle Cullen, because he was very close to he and his wife. And they just took us kids overnight, I think, to their house. But before the police left, my mother was, of course, settled in bed, trying to get over it. And Bobby was, I always cleaned up the messes that were the leftovers from my mother's rages. And there were broken things on the floor, and the cake was a mess. And Bobby says, I want some birthday cake. And I said, honey, you can't. It's all busted up. He says, no, I see a big piece in the dustpan. And I said, it's got glass in it. He said, don't worry. Mom will bake you another one tomorrow. I don't know if she did or not. But that was typical of now, usually during Christmas and other times, my parents knocked themselves out, you know, to have, and we have good memories. That memory I forgot about. Bob did not. And he, when he reminded me of it, it all came back. It just came back.
And you said, I mean, it's such a heartbreaking story, Betty. And so many of your stories are, although you tell them with such love and humor. But, you know, there's that old saying that tragedy plus time equals comedy. And I think...
Really? I never heard that before. I love that.
I think that's the story of your life in some ways, Betty.
Well, say that again. I can't remember that.
Tragedy plus time equals comedy.
Well, that's why I have a little humor in these
things
that happen.
But,
now, if I'd written them then, they might have not sounded very appealing.
Right. Well, and you know, I can feel the heartbreak even now. But in the end of your book, you talk about how, although the times were hard and there were so many ups and downs, how much you love your parents and how you think that they really shaped you and made you the woman that you are today.
Yeah, and that takes a long time to realize that, you know, I don't believe that I came to that just automatically. Writing the book is what brought me around to a different way of thinking. All my life I had felt, you know, my parents worked hard. They were star-crossed lovers, really trying to make it all work. And whenever my brother and sister and I were together as adults, we never recalled those terrible rows. We laughed about other things and the fun that we had, which makes me realize that that's part of why they worked so hard at it. The other thing is, I always thought my brother and sister and I ended up okay. We all had decent families and good relationships with each other. I always thought we ended up okay in spite of my parents. Now, it took recalling and working hard on those stories. You won't believe how long, off and on for 10 years. But when it came really to the guidance that I got from a writing coach, how much deeper I had to go than I was going to make it an interesting story, I realized at the end of the book when I was writing the epilogue that my brother and sister and I made it in life because of our parents.
Oh, Betty, thank you so much for talking with us today. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about dysfunctional family holidays, which so many of us have had at certain times during our lives. I was just talking with author Betty Ochard. She's written about her childhood growing up in Cedar Rapids in the 1930s. Her book is called The Home for the Friendless, and she'll be in Marion, Iowa, coming up on Saturday, February 16th for the library's first ever local author book fair in Marion. And she's also working on another book, so we definitely have that to look forward to as well. Well, and we're going to continue our conversation now about how the holidays can be so difficult. There can be so much tension this time of year. And with me now is Volker Thomas. He's an associate professor and program coordinator for couple and family therapy at the University of Iowa. Hello, Volker.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And we also want to invite you to join our conversation. If you have stories you want to tell, questions you want to ask, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we want to hear If you have a good story about the worst gift you've ever received from family, we want to hear that one as well. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Volker, I mentioned earlier how this can be such a difficult time for families, partially because expectations are so high, right?
Correct. And what most people have. And actually, before I talk about that, let me give you a warning. Expectations about holidays have a lot to do with experience that we've had and that we've carried around with us for long periods of time, especially experiences that we had in childhood. I grew up in Germany, and I came to this country 30 years ago. So whenever it comes to the holidays, not to Thanksgiving, because there's no Thanksgiving in Germany, so I don't have any hang-ups about Thanksgiving. But about Christmas, I have hang-ups from my own childhood. So whenever that comes up and I talk about it, the German creeps up in me. So if during our conversation I stop or I say something funny, then it's the German that came. Okay. And that really is something very important. You know, for many of us, the tension and the expectations about the holidays has something to do with this fantasy. Sometimes we know about it, sometimes we don't know about it, that this time may be what's going to happen, and the gift that I receive and the gifts that I give make up for what didn't happen when I wanted it to happen 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when I was 5 years old, or when I was 10 years old or 14 years old. So in a way, the holiday season is in a way a build-up to all these unmet expectations and fantasies that we have that get projected onto the upcoming holiday.
So we bring a lifetime of personal baggage to the holiday. Also, we do get together with family. And one of the things that I've noticed in my own family is that when we go home to my parents' house, my brothers and I act not entirely like children.
Of course.
But we react to each other in ways that we wouldn't react to other people as adults. We still have those same family dynamics that
Correct.
We did when we were kids.
Correct. And that has something to do, you know, within the expectations. When you're a child to your parent, you remain a child even when you are 50 or 60 years old. The only time when it really changes when parents get so old that the roles kind of get reversed, that adult children become caretakers of their children, because they can't take care of themselves anymore. But as long as they can take care of themselves, the children remain children in their eyes, and children remain children in their own eyes when they go home. It is the dynamics that it's still in place. They have been in place for many, many years that then get kind of come back up, especially when the holidays come, because it is one of those ritualized times when we have to behave the way we're supposed to, and the parents have to behave the way they're supposed to. But, you know, there have been grievances that have been added over the years and over the decades.
Well, plus we have new roles as well. We're wives and husbands
and
parents.
Yes.
And yet we are also children.
Yes. Yeah, and that makes it, in a way, it makes it a little easier, but it makes it more complicated too. Because when we have our own nuclear families, so we become parents and have our own children, many of those families establish rituals around the holidays. They take on some of the traditions from the families they grew up in, and then they add some to them. And that works quite often fairly well. But then when they take the kids and go back to grandma and grandpa, then everything's off, especially then for the kids and for the parents, who then become kids themselves. And then it has to, in a way, be renegotiated, or the expectations don't get met. Families actually who succeed in doing that, they can talk with their parents about it, and the parents can talk with their adult children about it, and then they establish some new rituals. If they don't do that, then the expectations become so extremely high that there usually is tension and disappointment about it.
Well, and the dynamics that I've been talking about come from a fairly healthy family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for families with more difficult histories, there's even more there.
Of course, because then if there was trauma in these families, then the trauma, in a way, in these expectations gets relived. When these children were small, they were dependent on their parent. If there had been some kind of trauma that took place in these families, they didn't have a choice. when they become adults, they have some choices, and yet they get drawn into the old dynamics. So they have to make a decision for themselves whether they can have to protect themselves enough that they can actually make it through the holidays with their families, or whether they get drawn in so much that at times they even get re-traumatized. And that makes it, of course, then much, much more difficult. And for some families, actually, or for some of these adults, it's advisable not to celebrate the holidays with their elderly parents because of those dynamics.
So for most of us, as we're approaching the holidays, how should we try to manage these expectations?
Think about them. Reflect on them. And then also, expectations are quite often related to gifts, and holidays are gift-giving season. And in a way, gifts are kind of an externalization of expectations, which means if you really love me and if you want to make up for grievances that I may have with you, then you really anticipate what I want and you give me the most wonderful gift that I could only imagine. And I don't even have to tell you what I want. And the other way around, you know, I am under so much pressure that I have to find just the right gift. And if I don't give it to you, then you're disappointed again. And you have been so disappointed so many times in me that I can never do it right. So the gift-giving part then becomes part of the expectations, part of the tension and part of the stress. And many people can't deal with that. And that's why I think in the last few years, the most popular gift has been gift cards. Because as neutral as they can be, so then the expectations kind of get disconnected from the content of the gift. And yet then quite often family members are greatly disappointed when it's only a gift card. You know, so then even there is the disappointment in there. So to sit down and think about very carefully, what are my expectations that I have of my family members? And what do I anticipate their expectations to be of me in terms of the way I'm supposed to dress even? Relate, interact with them, what kind of gifts or not gifts to give, things like that.
You mentioned that, you know, you may expect a gift that you receive from someone to make up for some grievances in the past. Is that part of this magical thinking with the holiday season?
Of course.
That we think that not only will this be the holiday we've always dreamed of, but this will make up for things that didn't happen the right way before.
Yes. Yep. Maybe this time it's going to happen. And sometimes it can be as simple as, you know, on my 9th birthday, I expected a certain gift and I didn't get that. And now I'm 35. Maybe I get a gift this time that's going to make up for that. And of course, usually parents or other relatives, they never know about this disappointment. It's carried around and then the expectation comes. So to have actually a ritual in which people can sit down and talk about these expectations, either during the holidays or before or after, so that the gifts actually get delinked from those expectations, that can be something actually can be quite healing in families.
The gift-giving ritual can also be used in some interesting negative ways. One of the reasons that I invited people to talk about their worst gift ever is because of past dysfunction in my family. My grandmother, my mom is an only child, and my grandmother spent her entire adult life after my parents got married trying to make sure that my dad knew that he was not welcome in the family. So for the first 10 or 12 Christmases that my parents were together, she didn't give him anything. And then she broke that non-gift-giving streak with a hard hat as a gift for my dad. And it was a hard hat that had been left behind in the garage by some workmen who had been working at the house. Another year, she gave him a shirt that my grandfather had won in a golf tournament, and it had a big stain on it. So she used a lot of these gifts to express her feelings in very pointed ways for many, many years. So those stories, which, as I mentioned earlier, you know, tragedy plus time equals comedy. Uh-huh. They're some of our funniest family stories. And that's why we want to hear yours as well. If you have your worst gift stories, or if you have family dynamics that you want to talk about, stories you want to share, questions you want to ask, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Robin is on the line from Moline, Illinois. Hi, Robin.
Hello.
Hi. What's
How are
your?
You?
I'm great. What's your story?
My grandmother on my father's side, not well off, but every year she made a real effort to have a very fancy sit down dinner for the entire extended family on Christmas Eve. And you know, she lived in a modest house, but she would spend the entire month preparing for this dinner. And after which we would have, the kids would open their presents. This occurred when I was 15 years old, so I was beyond the age of reason. I knew things. And we sat down to dinner, and Grandma always sat at the head of the table and offered grace. And after grace, just as a conversation starter, she turned or focused her attention on my youngest cousin, who was about 8 years old at the time. Her name was Heather. And she said, "Well, Heather, what did you do to keep yourself busy today?" And she said something along the lines of, "Well, I played with my Barbies." And Grandma said, "Well, did anything else happen?" And Heather promptly blurts out, "Yeah, Mommy and Daddy took a shower together." And everybody at the table just stopped eating. My uncle turned as red as a tomato and looked right across the table at Heather and said, "Heather, if you don't shut up, Santa will not be coming to the house tonight." And to this day, you know, every year at this time, I think back on that. It's a wonderful memory. My uncle's no longer with us, but I can't help but think about that every Christmas Eve.
And is it a good memory now, Robin, or is it a bad memory?
Oh, it's a terrific memory. When we talk about it as a family, we laugh and laugh and laugh. And you know, I don't see those cousins as often, you know, at Christmas time. We've all got our own families and we're living here, there, and everywhere. But when we do share that, the people that were there that remember it, we can't help but have great memories of it. We laugh. Because Grandma, I don't think Grandma, you know, had any reason. She tried to quickly change the subject, but it was, the reaction from my uncle was just hilarious.
Oh, Robin, thank you so much for calling and sharing.
Can I make a comment about this?
Yes, please
do. This is such a wonderful example of the wisdom of children. And that actually is a nice part about the holidays, you know, when families sit together and children share something that adults wouldn't talk about, you know, that then lead to wonderful memories like Robin's. I really enjoyed that.
The fact that these stories, and especially Betty's story earlier in the hour, you know, it's such a really tragic story, mm-hmm. but has turned into something so funny. It strikes me that humor is a very powerful coping mechanism this time of year.
Yeah. Can I tell a story about
Christmas
too? My worst Christmas gift?
I would love to hear it.
When I was 8 years old, I came down with hepatitis. And at my age, that meant 6 weeks isolation in a hospital. So, and we would get literally every day for dinner the same food. It was carrots and a little meat, and all mixed up with potatoes. That's all we got. And I got out of the hospital 2 days before Christmas. And my godfather and my godmother gave me a gift that was all nicely wrapped up. And when we unwrapped the gifts, I unwrapped it. And first I thought it's a sword like that because it was round and long. And then when I finally unwrapped it, I saw that it was a German sausage. And that was the last thing I was allowed to eat at that time. So I had what I had missed for months in my hands, and I couldn't eat it.
Oh.
And that meant so well, but I sat there, and my parents looked at me, and they knew I was not supposed to eat this, and I didn't let it go. I just held on to it. I said, "I'm going to hold on to it until the doctor says I can eat it." And that was the worst gift I'd ever gotten because I wanted to eat this so bad.
It was just pure torture.
That's right. And I couldn't eat it. So then my mom took it away eventually and said, we're going to keep it for you until you can eat it. But it took another 2 years until I was allowed to eat stuff like that because it was too fat and my liver couldn't digest it. So, and by when the 2 years were over, by that time, of course, my older brother had long eaten it.
I would kind of hope so at that point, really. Do you remember the first time you got to have a sausage after you felt better?
Oh, yes, actually. And I remember it when it had been taken away from me before. And, you know, later on, we laughed about it as well. It turned into humor.
All right. We're talking today about some of the tension and difficulties that the holiday season can bring, along with all of the love and the joy. I'm talking with Volker Thomas. He's associate professor and program coordinator for couple and family therapy at the University of Iowa. We want your stories as well today. We're collecting stories of the worst gifts we've ever received. You can share your story at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Alicia on Facebook says, when I was 12, my mother's boyfriend gave me a wrapped beer box with empty beer cans in it. They thought it was so funny. I was very disappointed. That one may top all so far. You can join us again, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about the holidays and how it brings families together, but how we also can bring some family tension with us when we all come together for the holidays. Dysfunctional family holidays may not make for the best time. Often they make for the best stories later on. They certainly seem to make for some of our best loved movies.
Where do you think you're going? Nobody's leaving. Nobody's walking out on this fun old-fashioned family Christmas. No, no, we're all in this together. This is a full-blown four-alarm holiday emergency here. We're going to press on, and we're going to have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap danced with Danny Kaye.
That's from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, which I know has become a Christmas tradition for a lot of people. And we would love to hear from you this hour. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. With us is Volker Thomas. He's associate professor and program coordinator for couple and family therapy at the University of Iowa. And that clip there demonstrates this sort of determination that I think a lot of us do bring to the holiday season. We are going to have a good time. We are going to get together. Mm-hmm. We are going to make this work no matter what.
That's right. You know, no, in a way, these ritualized festivities, you know, they have the purpose to provide some structure in times that are filled with potential stress. So then for the patriarch to stand up and is, we're going to have fun, is in a way kind of them trying to provide the structure. And then everybody has to follow the rule, right, and has fun. And of course, it's like being spontaneous. If you're told to be spontaneous, it's hard to be spontaneous. And if you're told to have fun, it's hard to have fun, especially if you're ordered to have fun. But it's an attempt, in a way, to provide a structure that keeps people together and in which, and I think that's what it really intends to do, in which then closeness can actually develop. You know, of course, in movies like this, it's a great disaster. But, you know, it's a humorous disaster. Unfortunately,
usually
many families...
Usually heartwarming in the end.
That's right. And in many families, it's not. You know, that they end up fighting, then running apart, you know, and then having, you know, to mend for the rest of the year until they go through the same conflictuous ritual the next holiday season.
Well, hopefully it helps a little bit that so many of us are in the same boat. So
we would
love to hear your stories today at 866-780-9100. Erica's on the line in Sioux City. Hi, Erica.
Hi, Charity. And can I just say hi, Dad?
Oh, hi, Erica.
I'm actually calling in from the other side of the state because this is where I live now. But I had heard that he was going to be speaking on the radio about this topic. And so I wanted to to call in and chat with you guys for a moment.
Oh, wonderful. What would you like to share?
Well, I think...
Don't embarrass me, Erica, okay?
Yeah.
You've always had fun.
I was going to say, I think he's right on, because our family has always had kind of very specific rituals that we follow, and I think that's what that brings me home every year. I've been out of the house for going on 9 years now, living out of state and hours away, and Christmas time is something that I always look forward to, because in our family, we have a small family, and when we've traveled to Germany to visit extended family, that's every so often, but other holidays, it's always just the four of us, my mom, my dad, my brother, and I. And that's a moment and time that, especially now as an adult, I feel like is very limited. There's not going to be much more of that. And so it's something I always look forward to. Who knows, maybe I get my expectations too high sometimes, but I always look forward to coming home and doing the same rituals we did 10, 15 years ago. I have a gingerbread house ready to go so that my brother and I can decorate it on Christmas Eve, even though, he's in his 20s and so am I, So I think, we always come back to that, and that's been my experience as well. So I just kind of wanted to share that.
Well, Erica, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
And Volker, with traditions like that happen every year, do you think that sometimes we can cause problems, though, as we get older, when it's not possible to carry out the traditions in the same way?
Well, let me give you an example from what my wife and I did with our kids, with Erica and Philip. In Germany, Christmas is celebrated differently. The gifts are exchanged on Christmas Eve, and there, at least when I was growing up, there was no Santa Claus. There was the Christ child. So, and here it's on Christmas Day morning. So when our kids were little, we had a German Christmas on Christmas Eve, where we had the German gifts and then the American gifts on Christmas Day morning. So we had to figure out a way to get the kids out of the house in order to put the German gifts under the tree. And the story I came up with is that Santa Claus, who existed now, actually came across the Atlantic on Christmas Eve afternoon, and that if we would go out and look, we could actually see him. So I took the kids when they were 4 or 5, and we went out. Sometimes it was cold, and we would look. And actually, Philip a couple of times saw Santa Claus up in the sky. And while we were out looking, my wife would put the German presents under the tree. And then when we came back, it was, yes, it was him. He was here. And when the kids were, they were teenagers, we figured out they're all too old for that now.
Okay, careful. Tread carefully.
That's
here.
Right.
So, not all of us are too old for that.
That's right. So we didn't want to do it anymore. Actually, we didn't initiate it. Before that, my wife or I would initiate it. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, the kids looked at each other and looked at us. Are we going to go out and look for Santa Claus from Germany? Otherwise, we're not going to get German gifts. They wanted to go out and do it, and we're still doing it.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Jan is on the line from Atlantic. Hi, Jan.
Good morning. Good morning. Merry Christmas.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, a somewhat funny Christmas that is funny in retrospect wasn't funny at the time. At the time, my two teenage kids, a boy and a girl, 16 and 14, were very much looking forward to Christmas, of course. And so, but their grandmother, my mother, had sort of a variable mood swing type life, and we never knew at Christmas what it was going to be. So this one particular Christmas, we were all gathered together, and my kids opened their present, each one of them at the same time. It was wrapped with a bow, and what was it? A bag of peanuts for each one. So they were frantically looking for the money or the check, and it never showed up. So we laugh about it now. But at the time, it was kind of anticlimactic. You know, a bag of peanuts? Are you kidding?
Yeah. Definitely she wanted to send a message.
Well, the message was, this was my mother. You just never knew.
Oh. Well, Jan, thank you so much for calling and sharing.
All right. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye. Yes.
Not everyone uses gifts in the same way.
That's right.
Not always in the spirit of generosity.
Well, and sometimes it could happen that she just forgot the checks.
It's possible. It's possible. Wendy's on the line next from Mount Pleasant. Hi, Wendy.
Hello.
Hi, what's your story?
I just wanted to say that when I was a kid, my grandmother was the cornerstone of our family, as far as there was a few Christmases where she was able to travel. They lived a long ways away, and they made Christmas for us as three of us kids. But as an adult, there was abuse in my home, and I've had to stop it with my own family and my son. And we moved to Iowa from Oregon to establish our family, our own traditions, and family get-togethers with my husband's family. That is a much healthier situation for a young boy to grow up in. And I just want to say that you can do that. It works. You just, as a family unit, you can remember the reason for the season. And if your family unit is not functioning, which mine isn't, and I've had to accept that as an adult, you can establish your own traditions in Christmas. And we get together every year at Christmas with my husband's family. And it's been a tradition of just sharing and remembering what Christmas is all about and being thankful for our family that we have.
Oh, Wendy, I'm so glad you called and shared that. What an important message to share. Thank you.
Sin, that is something, you know, what you're talking about is really that you've realized that you can't have the Christmases you would like to have with your family because of the abuse, but that there are alternatives, you know, that you can really enjoy the holidays anyway.
And that's a very serious side of this, that families get together often because they feel obligated to get together. There can be abuse that has never been revealed, never been talked about. So this can create an incredibly stressful, even dangerous situation for some members of a family.
Yep. And then to be able to draw the boundary and say, no, I do not want to participate in that. And I find something else, you know, so that I can participate in this cultural practice. I think that's a healthy way of dealing with it.
Well, Wendy, good for you, and happy holidays to you and your family. And Jane is on the line next in Clinton. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I'm struggling right now with what to do. I'm well into my 40s. I only recently revealed in the last couple of years to my mother that my older sibling, also a female, molested me. I don't think that she believes me. I'm pretty sure she doesn't believe me. That sister was out of the family for about a decade, and my younger sisters decided to reunite with her without telling my other sister and myself. They've done that in the last couple of years, and it's now kind of become an us-against-them kind of thing. I've been called a liar, told that I don't know, whatever negative name you can think of, I've kind of been called it. Yet at the same time, I still want to honor my mother. I mean, she's getting older, and I do love her. I don't understand her, and I don't think I'm the child she wanted. But, you know, it is what it is, and I'm trying really hard to deal with it in a decent, kind way, and there doesn't seem to be one, I guess.
What a very difficult situation you're in, Jane. Folker, what can you offer Jane right now? Obviously, this is not a problem that can be solved in 30 seconds.
Especially not at the holiday time. I would suggest for you to, if you have not, to find somebody you can trust to confide in, and then maybe talk with your mother when the holidays are over, but don't try to, you know, honor her at the holidays with your sisters being there, because I think that is a setup for you then to get traumatized again.
Okay.
Jane, I'm so sorry, and I hope you can find someone who can help you.
Actually, I am seeing a counselor.
Well, wonderful. Great.
I'm just trying to break out of old patterns. I have a family of my own that is, I've been very blessed. I've been married a long time, happily, and I have three children who are wonderful to me and to each other, and so I have a lot to be grateful for, but this is a pretty huge sore that just doesn't seem to ever get healed. And
yeah.
I want to do the right thing. I just don't know what the right thing is. So.
And sometimes it takes a while to figure out what the right thing is, and then what's the right thing for you to do may not be the right thing for your mother and for your sisters. You know, and that
would
is something.
You said it might be right for me, but not for them. Is that what you said?
Yes. Yeah. And then it takes a while to work through that and to figure out on how you can deal with that discrepancy between what's the right thing for you to do is and how much they can accept of that from you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how much how far you can go with them.
It wouldn't be wrong to, you know, try and see my mother at another time, not at the.
Yeah.
You know, you think that would be okay?
Oh, of course. Yes.
Okay.
Good luck.
Well, thank you.
Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
You have a nice holiday.
Thank you. You too.
Okay.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Jane, thank you so much for your call. And we are nearly out of time. We have some other wonderful stories that I'd love to share. But as we end the hour, I think that Jane's story is an important one mm-hmm. to bear in mind. As we go into the holiday season, it's not just our own expectations that we're coping with. It's the expectations of our families as well. How do you suggest that we think about this so that we can do the right thing in the holiday season and not just try to live up to what everyone else wants us to be?
It is so important to really, in a way, put ourselves into our family members' shoes and try to walk their walk in anticipation of what's going to happen. And then make a decision whether what I can offer and what I would like to do matches what my family members can do. Like with the last caller, I don't think, you know, that neither the mother nor the sisters are ready, you know, to walk the walk and to have the conversation that she needs to have. So there has to be some preparation for that first. And then to try to do that during the holidays probably is the worst time because there is so much, you know, that gets carried into that and the expectations we've talked about and the disappointments we've talked about. You know, but to really reflect on what can I do, what do I need, and what's bearable to others as well. You know, because so often then we want to do the right thing and we want to work things out, but our family members are not ready yet. And they haven't thought as much about it as we have when we've discovered something new about family members.
So we need to take care of ourselves. We
yes.
need to take care of our children.
Yes.
And be kind to others.
Yes. That's a nice summary.
Volker, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Volker Thomas is Associate Professor and Program Coordinator for Couple and Family Therapy at the University of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Sarah Bowden and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime. talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org is our email address. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk about wolves and their future in this country. Talk of Iowa was a production of Iowa Public Radio News.